Hello, hello, hello. This is Cortina Jackson, and you are listening to What's on Cortina Jackson's Mind. You know, I've grown to know that it's not always about what's on my mind. This show is about what's on other people's minds, and I'm just very blessed to have those opportunities where I'm able to talk with other people and find out what's on their mind, what's going on with them. There are some wonderful, wonderful people in this world, and today is no exception. You all, I'm very excited. I know I always say that, but I am. When I do these podcasts, I really am very excited. It's not a joke with me. Well, today, I'm very excited to have with me Miss J. Renee Morris. Oh, how are you, beautiful lady?
I am well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful.
Good.
You guys, oh, this woman is so wonderful. And when I talked to her, I was so blessed because we shared just so much in common. You know, unfortunately, circumstances happen in our lives. And sometimes there are bad things that happen to very good people. And you know, we go through our stories, but we hope that these stories will inspire others and be a blessing, you know, as you realize, you know, things that you are going through in your life, that you have worth and that you are meant to do greater things. So me and Miss Morris, we share a similar story in that I grew up in church. I have been in church my entire life. I was dedicated to God as a newborn, and I've been going to church ever since. Now that doesn't always mean that I was in church like I should have been, but my entire life has been centered around church. My dad is the pastor. My mom was the church mother. I was Church of God in Christ. So very, very strict upbringing. And most of my uncles are pastors. So I went to a family church where my uncle was the pastor. Now, you all, that doesn't always mean that you are safe within those confines of church. You know, sometimes we think, or I thought, being in a family church, almost everybody was family, and having the protection of God in my life, that I was safe. But do you not know that Satan comes after the church? That's his goal. He wants to make mockery of everything. So if he can go and infiltrate the church, oh, that's a victory in his kingdom. That's a victory for him. And so, you know, even as I grew up going to church, a lot of things happened to me. Unfortunately, a man came into the church that wasn't a part of the church, and he set his sights on me. And unfortunately, that ended up ending in a sexual assault. And so from that, moving on throughout my life, just so much happened that transpired in my life. I'm so grateful today that that God has delivered me and given me a platform. And that is why we are here today. I want to give someone else a platform because this is common, y'all. Unfortunately, we go through these things. We think we're an island, but these things are happening. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to turn the floor over to you, J. Renee, to introduce us to who you are. Where are you from? Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I am born and raised in Indiana. I am a mom of three beautiful boys in whom I adopted. They are biological brothers, and they're 6, 7, and 10 now. When they first came into my home, they were 3 and 8 months. And then a year later, we got the baby brother, and he was 6 weeks. So I've had them that, you know, I'm pretty much at them from the beginning.
Yes. Wow.
So I have them. And then I'm also a homeschool mom. This is my first year homeschooling. So I decided to homeschool this year. I'm a homeschool mom as well.
Oh, goodness. I'm sure there are challenges that go along with that as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. Yes. You'll have to tell me how that is as well.
Yeah.
And so... Yes, yes. As a matter of fact, please go into the tell us about homeschool because I thought of doing that. You know, in the public school system, it's not always what I wanted them to learn a little more. And so I considered homeschooling, but it is It was hard. I'm sure. You're just getting into that. How is that going for you?
It's going really well. I'm learning that time management is what plays a huge part in homeschooling. So it took me a little bit to get that portion down. I now work from home as well. So, and with them being younger, I was challenged with, you know, which time of day would be best for me to work. And which, and for them to, you know, for me to train them and things. I don't have, my homeschool is not set up as school is, to where everything is so structured, and they don't even realize they're learning. In the beginning, they didn't understand that they were being homeschooled. They told me they weren't learning anything. And so, especially my younger two. And so I had to, you know, just speak things and say, okay, what is this? What is that? And when they realized they knew it, they were, you know, they were looking like, wow. I incorporated it where they're learning without knowing that they're learning. Everything that we do is a learning experience for them.
Yes.
So they're now starting to understand, okay, we're homeschooled. Because before people ask, oh, what school you go to? And they'll look at me like.
Oh, wow. Yes.
You're homeschooled, you know. Yes. So, yeah, but time management was a huge is a huge part of homeschooling. I think that's the biggest part of it.
Yes.
Time. Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, some moms, especially when school starts in summer, after a summer break is the key word in there. A lot of parents love that time because they get to send the children away. They eat at school, and that kind of gives the moms a break. Do you find that with them being homeschooled, you don't have that break that you probably would desire to have sometimes?
You know what? For me, it's so different. So my biggest thing for them has always been their safety. So I have always desired to have connection in some way. And a lot of people will tell me, well, you need a break, you need this. But you know, in just seeking God about how to raise them, because I would tell God, I don't know how to be a mother. Help me, I don't know what I'm doing. This is just where He has me right now. So even when they were in school and it was time for Christmas break or whatever, I would be so excited to have them home. So for me, that break is not desired right now. And I truly believe it has a lot to do with my ministry to them. That is what I believe it is as to why a break for me right now is just not what's needed. Now don't get me wrong. There are times when I feel overwhelmed. I feel frustrated. And I'm like, okay, God, you need to help me. But what is so important to me is I will not jeopardize their safety for my needing that time alone.
Exactly. Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah. Mm. So right now, I just believe that this is where they have to be because of what I need to impart into them. And it's a daily thing, daily impartation. So, but I'm sure there's going to come a time. God knows when I need it.
Yes. Yes. And He will provide that time when it is needed.
Yes, He will.
Oh, I love that safety aspect that you talk of. Gosh, there's just so much going on in the world right now. My boys are grown and I worry about them constantly. And that's something I pray about because I don't want to be consumed in worry all the time. That's not good either, you know.
Right.
We pray, we put our children in God's hands, but He would not have us to have a spirit of fear or this worry and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I do understand too the need for their safety, their well-being, you know, being taught the right things as well. So,
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. So these beautiful children, we're going to find out how they came to be. But you all, Jay Renee's story hasn't always been, you know, she comes from this safety environment where safety is very important. But her own safety and her own anxieties, these were challenges for her. Tell us about, you know, take us back of how you grew up, kind of similar to mine, and then we'll go back over to the children and how they came to be. Tell us about you.
I grew up with my dad. So my dad was my primary force. He was the main one there all the time. My mom would tell me of stories of how, so my mom and dad, they were not living together at the time. And she would tell me stories of how she would go to work and she would drop me off at the daycare, go to work. And when she come back, I was always gone. My dad had always come and got me from the daycare. So, so at some point, I guess, you know, because he was, my dad was absolutely always there. There is not a time that I can remember that he was not there. And so because of that, she had her own house, he had his own place. And so I ended up living with him. So I was always with my dad, you know, my mom would come around, but I was mainly living with my dad for a period of time, a very long period of time. I think up until my freshman year of high school, I'm not mistaken, is when they actually decided to come together and make this thing work. So yeah, so I grew up with my dad. I did grow up in our family church. I was always in church with my mom. I think ever since I was like 5 years old, I was in church with my mom, and it was a church that my uncle pastored. And so family church, you know, comfortable there, felt safe there, knew everybody there because I grew up there. So I was there all my life. Well, mostly all of my life I was there.
Wow. Well, you grew up in church. You were, that was always your environment. And you were married, of course. So tell us about how you met your husband.
Met him at church. So I don't know how long he was attending there, because I did not even know of him until we served on a ministry together. That is when I first saw his, well, I think I first saw his face. I may have seen him before, but just never paid any attention. Yeah, but that's when I first recognized him. We worked on the ministry together, and we ended up having an assignment together. And when we were given this assignment, he had given me his number and asked me to give him a call. And so, I called, being naive, I'm thinking it was about whatever the ministry duty was. And I called, he said that God told him I was his wife. And so my first, the first thing that came out of my mouth when he said that was, God didn't tell me that. And I believe that the enemy is sending you to destroy me. And so he didn't say anything. He just kept on conversation, just kept talking and kept talking. And so after pursuing me for so long, I finally told him, I said, you know what, if you are serious, then you need to go to the pastor and ask, you know, talk with the pastor about it and see what he says. And he told me that he did do that. I never asked the pastor, which was something I should have done. I just believe what he said. He told me that the pastor said it, so, you know, that we should start dating and, you know, see where it goes from there. So with that, I gave in and started dating. And a while later, very while, I think it was even after we married, is when I asked the pastor about it. I believe it was after we married, is when I asked the pastor about it. And he was like, I didn't tell him that. And I was like, okay.
The relationship is going well initially.
It went.
Or did you see signs?
No, I always saw signs. I saw signs of the alcohol part. That is what I saw. I did see signs of the drinking, but I didn't, you know, so a week after we were married, we married on a Friday, and that following Friday, my sister passed away. And that is when I first experienced the name calling. I was going through my grieving process, and that's when I was, he first told me I was crazy. Something's wrong with you. You acting like you're crazy. And that is when, and from that point forward, that was the one word I would hear the most. You're crazy, or you're acting like you're crazy. That was the one. So it was always negative speaking, you know, calling me out of my name. And it had even gotten to the point with the you're crazy thing. I heard it so much, I began to go to myself and go to God and be like, you know, is there really something wrong with me? He's saying this too much. So it has to be something that's going on with me in order, you know, for him to keep saying this.
Right.
So I started believing it. I started thinking that I was crazy, that it was something wrong with me. Never seeing that, you know, what was truly going on.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, isn't that something?
Yeah.
How long did you stay in this marriage, and were there things beginning to escalate that brought you to a certain point where enough was enough? You know, tell us about this. There are people who are going through. A lot of people think abuse is physical, and they think, you know, if you're being hit, then you're being abused, and anything else, maybe it's this or maybe, you know. Tell us about how it escalated and how, you know, this all kind of led you to believe this is more than that. Or did you, like you said, you kind of felt maybe it is me, because, you know, unfortunately when we hear things, we think, well, he's pretty, you know, he's pretty smart. He's pretty astute. Maybe it's me. And God, maybe you're trying to show some about me. And that's not always the case. So it's important for women to hear what you went through and what led to all of this. So tell us a little bit more about this and how you felt life transpired.
I stayed in the marriage for 11 years. And, you know, the verbal abuse, like you said, I didn't think I was being abused, because I thought abuse was physical. I thought if I'm not being hit on, it's not abuse. So, I know in 2013, I was diagnosed with clinical depression. Mm. And yet again, I still thought it was me. I thought it was something about me, you know. For me, that even proved that it was me. You know, now I'm getting a diagnosis of something. So, you know, maybe he's right in all this stuff he's saying about me, because now they're telling me I'm clinically depressed. So it kept going and going, and it took for me, it had gotten to a point that I knew I needed prayer, because I just did not want to live anymore. You know, I was in that place of like, I can't do this. I cannot do this. And I reached out to a minister, and I just let her know, you know, I really need you to pray for me. And so I told her some of the things that was going on. And when I told her that, she said, that's abuse. And I did not believe her. So I was like, no, it's not. I said, he's just saying this or that or that. I said, that's not abuse. She was like, yes, that is abuse.
Yes.
And it took me 2 years to even believe that. I still went on for 2 years thinking that, not that it was normal, but that, you know, that made, you know, that I was doing something to cause him to feel this way about me, to cause him to say these things about me.
Yes.
Excuse me. It was something that I was doing to cause this. So after so long, like I said, now I was always in the church, but I did not pursue a relationship with God. I was in the church. I heard the word. But me actually seeking relationship, I had not done that.
Yes.
So I was not in that place that I even pursued to hear from Jesus. I don't even know at that time that I had an understanding of that.
Mm.
But in the midst of this is when I cried out and I said, Lord, I need your help. You know, I don't want to be here anymore. This is too much for me. I can't do this. And that's when I began to hear the Holy Spirit leading and guiding me, you know, telling me what to do, speaking encouragement to me. And it would come as in my thoughts, but I would be encouraged within myself, you know, of that's not true. That's not who you are. You know, I love you. That's the one thing I would hear a lot. I love you. I would hear that so much. And so I didn't love myself. And I was like, you know, thinking, why would I be telling myself I love you? You know, I don't like what's going on. I don't like, you know, where I am. I don't like the choices I've made. And I was so hard on myself about giving in as well, about making the decision to be with this person. How can I do that? How do I not love myself enough to be more careful in making decisions about who it is that I'm choosing to spend the rest of my life with? So there was a lot of self-condemnation, self-hatred, and just, you know, being so hard on myself. There was so much of that. But after, you know, really getting to the place where I can hear, that I can hear, and I was, you know, hearing that I love you and no, this is not your fault. It started to register, because of course, at first I didn't believe it. But then after a while, after that continuation of hearing that, I began to believe it. And so I had that unction of wanting to go, but then it was like, okay, so after a while, so maybe about 4 or 5 years later is when the boys came into our home.
Wow.
And then, yeah, so then once I welcomed them into the home, it's like, okay, I have to stay, because they need a two-bear at home. They yes. need a dad in the home. They're boys. They need a man in the house. So I stayed for that reason. Still continuing to go through the verbal abuse, you know, the mental abuse. And the last time that I experienced it, my youngest son and I were sitting at the kitchen table. And my ex said to me, you guys, what did he say? He said that we need to be, you get out of his house. We need to get out of his house, and some other things that he said. But what did it for me? When he left out of the house, my youngest son looked at me and said, Mommy, I don't want to be here anymore. Daddy is being really mean to you. And for me, that broke something. You know, it was like, I can't do this. I can't. Yeah. I realized that it's not helping them for him to be there. You know, so no matter, you know, you don't want... You don't get into a marriage or start dating someone thinking that this is what the outcome is going to be.
Exactly.
You just don't. So when you're in it, though, don't stay in it for the children. You know, that is the worst thing that I learned that we can do, is stay in it for the children. Since I have been out of there, I have been so free and able to really focus in on them and their needs. What the mother that I need to be to them, I can focus on that more, because another thing, all of my attention was being pulled to him. It was like I couldn't give the boys my attention like I needed to.
Yes.
So I'm able to do that now without being overbearing, though. We have to be careful, because we can become overbearing. We can like smother them and just be so consumed. And I think that's where a lot of people think that I am, because I'm always around them. But it's not a overbearing consuming them. You have to have a watchful eye. You have to use wisdom and have discernment as well. Yes. So I don't let them just go anywhere, and I don't know the environment, and I don't know what's going on in that place, and I don't know the people, you know, and I don't, especially if, you know, God will let you know about people sometimes, or not so much as to everything about them, but he'll give you that discernment, or you'll get that intuition or something is not right. And we have to listen to those things. So so you know, I'm able now to really focus in more on them and do what's needed to do for them, but yet and still they get out, they get to get out and have fun with, you know, my biggest thing, make friends, you know, get out and make friends. So I'm huge on that, and that is something that they do and that they enjoy.
Oh, you brought that out beautifully. I'm so glad you said that. A lot of moms do stay for the kids. That, oh my, I'm so glad you really pointed that out so well, because a lot of women do feel guilty. I stayed for my kids, same thing. I stayed because they were boys, and originally I got married because, got married again, this was my second marriage, so I got married for them. I felt like they were at that age where they were growing, and they had questions about their bodies and, you know, just learn how to be a man. I thought this would be a good idea. It turned out to be the worst thing.
Yeah.
And in trying to stay, it only deepened the abuse, not only for me, but for them emotionally. They had to see their mom in these situations, and it really affected them. And so you're right. And I love also about the smothering, because a lot of times mothers feel guilty that they even put their children through that, and, or that they're kind of torn, you know, I want to stay for them, but I feel bad that they have to see this or endure this. And it tends to make a mother cling to them and
yes,
your balance with your children is so wonderful. Because we can't just let them go, you know, it's very important. I had to know, I had to meet my kids' friends' parents. I had to go to their home and go in, and if things didn't look right, I would give my boys that look like, no, we are, y'all are not staying. Y'all, I'll sit here and y'all can talk to them a little while and then we're gonna go.
Yes, absolutely.
Because it's important. You all, we're living in a time and day when it's important, you know, to be there for your children and to have that discernment. Yes. But also know you don't have to stay in an emotional, verbal, physical abuse for the children. You don't have to do that thinking that they need a dad, they need a two-parent home. Because women are, you know, we're able to raise these children and sometimes, and not being in that relationship, I know for me, I'm like you. Gosh, we're so much alike. Oh my goodness. Though I was raised in church, it was the first time after all of this happened that I got to a quiet place and lived by myself. And there was nothing else. I started from rock bottom. I had an air mattress and a lamp. And mm-hmm. I was in my own yes. apartment.
Yes.
I was the happiest I had ever been in my entire yes. life. But it was the first time I looked up and realized, hey, God, hey, mm-hmm. hey, you know, you remember me? And I'm sure he said, yeah, I've seen you. But, you know, in my mind, I was thinking, wow, you know, I know the way. And I've been raised in church. And yet, this is the first time I'm falling on my knees. And, you know, our God is so good that yeah. he is so forgiving. And he gave mm-hmm. us so much grace that things could have been worse. In my life, in your life, things could have been so much worse. But yes. even when we weren't even calling out to God, he had grace and he had mm-hmm. mercy on us.
Absolutely.
And here we are today. We're rebuilding our lives. Sometimes we still hurt. Sometimes we still struggle. We still cry. But God has given us such grace. Such grace.
Yes.
And I just love your story as an adopted parent, because there are people out there who have children that they've adopted, and they're in a situation or they're considering, you know, leaving something in their life that's not healthy. It's just, it's not healthy. So in raising boys, especially, and we're not trying to exclude the girls, because, you know, these same things happen with the girls, but has this affected the boys, you think? Are they, first of all, did it ever get physical with yourself or with the children? Were they emotionally abused? Were they talked to in this manner of saying, hey, you know, like, unfortunately, some kids, sit down, stupid, or go over there. Don't be dumb. Don't act stupid. Were they subjected to any of that as well?
They were not. I thank God for that. It was all towards me. So they were not subjected to any of that verbal abuse or, but now I must say though, emotionally, yes.
Yeah.
Because it's like he wants everybody to just love him and he wants everything about him. So emotional abuse. Yeah. They did, experience that. Yeah. Mm. And I want to say too, I want to go back to when we were talking about not staying.
Yes.
For the sake of the children. One thing that I learned is that when I left, God brought two men into my children's lives. That one was a pastor, and then another is a minister at a church that I used to attend. And the amazing thing about it is my youngest son chose them. So we were at church and I would watch him because I noticed early that he has a discernment for people. And so I would watch him and it never failed. He chose those that can really pour into him.
Mm.
And one of the men now is still a part of their lives. He's a part of all of the boys' lives. So that's something that God will do. He will place men in their lives who they can trust, who they can come and talk to, who will minister to them, who will pray for them. So he will do that, you know, as well. I didn't know it then. I just knew I needed to get out. And especially when my son said that, I knew I had to go. But God, and don't go looking for it though. You know what I mean? Don't go search, seeking it out, because we'll seek out the wrong thing. Let God do it. Let him do it. And he will place men in their lives that will help them along the way. And I believe that is why they are so well-rounded right now. Yeah. Did they have struggles? Absolutely. Especially when I first left. They wanted me to go back, you know? And I thought about it. I really thought about it, but it was like, no, I can't, because I need them to know this is not the way you treat a woman.
Yes.
I need them to know this is totally unacceptable. So at a young age, I had to discuss to a certain extent these things to give them an understanding of how you treat women, because they even started trying to treat me that way. Yeah, they did. And so I had to have many talks with them to let them know this is totally unacceptable and this is not how you treat women. And then I had to go to the Word of God as well and just, you know, began to teach them what God says and how, you know, they are supposed to treat everyone, not just women, but everyone. So,
Wow, that's good. Are the is he still in the children's lives? Is he still around?
Yeah, he's still around. So they get every other weekend visits now.
Are there challenges in that? In that his upbringing is maybe a stark difference from yours, or do you feel like he influences them when he's when they are with him?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it has been very challenging. My children, they leave, you know, one way happy, and they come back, and it's, you know, it's always something. So it's very, very challenging. And all I can do, because now that was the one thing that caused me anxiety, sending them. Because, you know, I know the environment, and I know, at first I didn't know that things were being said about me, but then I later come to find out he was saying negative things to them about me, which was changing their reception of me and how they, you know, how we communicated and just how we reacted with one another. And so then, you know, they finally did tell me some things that were being said. So I would always get anxiety when it was that time to send them. But I had to, I knew this was something that I, it was nothing I can do about it. Absolutely nothing I can do about it. So I just asked, I trust God. I had to, this is where I really learned to trust God when it came to these children, because I'm like, God, you gave them to me. You created them. I can't protect them the way you can. I can't save them from anything how you can. So I trust them with you. And I am able to have peace sending them, knowing that God is always watching over them and that he's not going to allow anything. This is not by happenstance. I used to feel so guilty and condemn myself. And I want to say this to other adoptive moms. Oh my gosh, bringing my children into this situation. And it's like, okay, my, I was supposed to be bringing them, well, not actually bringing, they were placed in my home because of a bad situation. And now I placed them back into a bad situation. I had to deal with that for a very long time. That was really bad. So what I had to come to understand is they're with me for a reason. Even though we're separated, the courts could have said, he, you know, he'll, they get to live with him. But no, God saw fit that they're here with me. That's for a reason. Yes, they, you know, they went through some things, even in my care. We can't condemn ourselves for that. It happened. It happened. Yes, we acknowledge that. Now let's grow from it. Let's move forward. Let's encourage them. Let's pray for them and help and ask God to heal them in that. I'm a true believer that God will cause them to not even remember it.
Yes.
That he will bring them to a place of such healing and wholeness that they won't even remember certain things that can really, you know, be a detriment. They'll remember things that will help them have a voice to speak with other adoptive children and, you know, help encourage them and speak life into them. But I just truly believe some things God is not going to allow them to remember. He will just wash them and make them clean so that they will be whole. So don't condemn yourselves. Any adoptive mom that's either in the situation now, have gotten out of the situation, don't condemn yourself. You know, it happens. Like I said, we don't choose these things.
Yeah.
At that moment, our decision for being with that person may not have been the right decision, but it's a choice we made, and God will cause us to grow from it. He will allow that to be a part of your testimony.
That's
so just,
right.
You know, use it for that. Just, you know, find courage within yourself and find a safe way, if you're still there, of getting out. Please stay safe. Please stay safe. I cannot stress that enough. But, you know, find the courage within yourself. Begin to seek out resources that will help you get out of that situation. And once you get out, that will help you be sustained to stay out, to not go back. Stay out. Work on you. You know, it took a while. I left in April. Well, we were put out, actually. I didn't even leave. Like I said, he said that, you know, we needed to get out of his house. But that was in April of last year. And it took me a little while, but then I started, you know, because when you first leave, you're just in such a low, low, low place.
Yes.
And so it took me several months to get it together, to even find the strength to start seeking help for myself. And that's when I came across your first video. And I didn't realize that it was a new video. I thought I was watching a video from years earlier.
Wow.
Until recently. Yeah, I did not know it was you had just posted that video. And you don't know how that encouraged me to just hear you sit, because it wasn't scripted. It wasn't, you know, you talking from a piece of paper. You just told your story. And that reached me, hearing the realness in it, hearing the truth. And like you said, it was a lot of things that I could relate to, because I had gone through as well. So hearing your story, it truly, truly, truly helped me to then be able to get up and say, you know what? I gotta do it. Not that I can, but I have to. No matter what I'm feeling right now, I have to do it. And then I would just continually see your post and see how you were progressing and how, you know, God was moving in your life. And I was like, then I got to the point, I can do this. You know, I can do it. She did it, I can do it too.
Oh, wow.
So, So you truly blessed me in this process. Oh my gosh. I needed that. I absolutely needed to hear that. And at that time, I needed it. I needed it.
Oh my goodness. What an honor. What an honor and a blessing. Goodness. That I was able to make that type of an impact. Gosh, you know, a lot of people go through this. And at that point, I was so low. I went out on my balcony. It was kind of my last effort. I just didn't even want to. Didn't even want to do it anymore. I was tired of the ups and downs. And some days, okay, God, I'm trusting you. I believe you. I can do this. And then some days, God, where are you? Then I was arguing. It seemed like every day was different. One day I'm mad at God, and one day I'm pleading with God, and some day, God, please, to the point where it wasn't any more prayer. It was just, please, please. Yeah. What did I do wrong? Why don't you hear me? Why are you? Every day, and that kind of, I went out on my balcony. It was my last thing. I was just so, you could kind of almost see the weariness on my face. I was just so done. Because, you know, a lot of people in their abuse, and this is what people fear, is that they'll get out on their own and struggle. I stayed for the kids, and I stayed because I really didn't have the money to be on my own. I didn't have the type of job he had. My ex-husband was a man of influence. He had great jobs. The thing that hurt me the worst about this is that why I argue with God a lot is because he seemed to get job after job after job. And every time he got a new job, he got more money. Like, I knew this man was he was a very fake person. He was a manipulative person, and so he was able, and you'll be able to kind of attest to this, how I always look like kind of the crazy one, or, you know, because he was the smart one. He had the great jobs. He was making six figures. He was the supervisor, and he was a big influence. People loved him. He was a talker. That's all he did was talk, and charming. People cling to him because he could hold a great conversation. And so I just didn't feel like, from years of feeling that I was nobody and I was nothing without him, and yeah, you go try to make it. Let's see if you can make it. I feared that I can't make it on my own. I don't have the jobs. I can't seem to get the jobs to make it on my own, but I too was forced out. He tried to kill me, and I left still with nothing. But yeah. Yes, you know, the freedom of being able to be centered and realize who I was important. I didn't know who I hated myself. Mm. I don't even think my ex-husband hated me as much as I hated me. Mm-hmm. I hated myself so much and blamed myself for everything. And yeah. Even when I went to counseling, I was even telling my counselor, well, I was the stupid one. I'm the one that got in the relationship. I'm the dumb one. It wasn't him. It was me. I can't make good decisions. Mm-hmm. And it took a while. And this is why I wanted to do this platform and allow other people to speak, because it wasn't until I did that video that people said, hey, me too. I went through that. I'm like that. I go, you're an encouragement.
Yes. And
it just prompted me to be grateful. I don't even know. The very next day, this went from, I was pretty much suicidal at that point. I was pretty much done. Next day, I decided, I'm just going to try to be grateful. I'm just going to try it. This is going to be dumb, but I'm going to try every morning to say, I love you. And I would look in the mirror at myself and think, I love you. No, I don't. You're so dumb. It took a while, but every day, saying something I'm grateful for. Okay, yeah. I woke up this morning, and I'm fixing to go to this job that I hate, but I'm grateful. It started out so sarcastic. But the more I did it, the more my life changed almost overnight. Overnight, my life changed. You too, you've experienced this with your now ex-husband being in this position. Did you have those feelings as well that he's, you know, he's in this position of power and I'm nothing. How am I gonna raise three boys? And
yes. Oh. Yes, absolutely. Because he works in the system, and so absolutely. So anything that had to do with court, it always seemed like he was the one believed. Especially in the beginning, because he had an attorney. I didn't have any money to obtain an attorney. Oh, that was the worst experience I have ever gone through.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. It was like I was abused all over again in the court system. It was horrible. So when I speak of anxiety, I think that's when my anxiety was at its peak.
Yeah.
Because even knowing when it was time for me to go to court, I was all over the place. I was just no good because I knew what I was about to go into. Definitely I felt that way. He had position of authority, and I felt it. I knew it. You know, it was expressed, it was shown in the courts. And I mean, even to the point where the divorce went through rather quickly, whereas I'm told it should have been 6 months.
Yes.
I think it was a month and we were done. That's just how much influence there was.
Yes.
And so, yeah, we were done. And like I said, I didn't have an attorney, so I had no one with that legal background able to fight on my behalf. So I pretty much took whatever I was given, basically.
Yes.
So, yeah, I definitely felt that. And even now it's better. And I know I have to keep going back to God, because it's just where my mindset is now, in trusting Him in everything.
Everything.
So it doesn't matter what job or title He has. It That's doesn't right. matter, because my God, He gave you the title, you know?
Yes.
So yeah. Now it's better. You know, my mindset, I'm in a better place mentally. And so, and everything has been working in my favor, I must say. It has truly been working in my favor. The process seems to be long to me, of what is still going on, but yet and still, I do see God's hand in it. And I know there's things I'm still learning and things He's still doing in me, is why I am, you know, why I am where I am right now.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it is well.
Thank you, Lord.
Yeah.
Okay, now you're working on a book.
Yeah.
Yes, tell us about that. Tell us your process. What is the name of this book, if you have one already? Tell us about this book that you're writing.
So the name of the book is This Is How God Loved Me, The Story of You Coming Home. And it started out to be a love story to my children of how they actually got me as their mommy. So I've always told my children, I've always said that word adopt to them. It has been my desire that they always know that. I never wanted it to be where they found out when they was in, you know, late teens, 20s, 30s. I wanted them to know from the very beginning so that it will not ever come to them as a, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, as something that's bad.
Right.
Because it's not. And people will try to make it seem that it is.
Yes.
But it's not. So even at 6 weeks, I would say that word. I would always say the word. There was no story behind it, but every now and again, I'll just say the word.
Yes.
When they got older, I did make up a story, a bedtime story that I would read to them about being adopted. And then once they got to the age where I knew that they would understand, is when I really sat them down and explained to them, you know, what it is, and, you know, that they were not in my tummy. I explained all of that. My youngest son, he don't want to hear it. I do believe he understands.
Yeah.
He won't accept it.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. But, so they do know. So it was just I had a burning desire to write a story to them that just pretty much laid out everything, how I even came to the point of choosing to foster, choosing to adopt. So it's a love story to them, but in it as well, it also speaks to adoptive parents, adoptive moms. And I also have a page in there for the bio mom, because I thank the bio mom as well. Just a love story to my boys, letting them know how everything came about. It explains adoption, I go really into detail about explaining fostering, explaining adoption, explaining the process of it all, how I even learned about fostering to adopt, because I always thought adoption was you had to go to a private company and pay all of this money, you know, to try and adopt. But in my decision to foster is when I even learned about fostering to adopt and became an adoptive home. So I even go into the details of that as well.
That's gonna help a lot of people. I've considered that as well, so I'm excited about. Are you almost done with it, or is it complete?
It is complete. It is now in the editing process. Yay. So be looking for, we are in December. I am looking to have it released January the 30th. That will be my release date. Yes.
This is exciting. Okay, so we're going to have to do an update and a big release to let people know about this. This is
absolutely.
Now, is there a place where people could reach out to you? You have social media. Is there a place where people can find you on social media, a website, anything where people, you know, can pour into you and, and even seek your book when it's out.
Yes, my Facebook page is J. Renee Morris on Facebook, and it is the same for Instagram. And then I do have email. If you want to just reach out to me, want to talk, discuss anything about being an adoptive parent in this, you know, adoptive mom in the same situation, johnnyrenee@gmail.com, johnnyrenee@gmail.com. You can email me and I will definitely reach back out to you and assist in whatever way that I can.
Wonderful, wonderful. Yes. Well, any parting word? This has been outstanding. I pray that it helps someone who's going through any type of abuse, first of all, that this will be, you know, something that will inspire or spark something within them, that you don't have to accept that, and that you can make it on your own. You can make it. God will sustain you. God will meet you where where you are and deliver you out of those adversities in your life. So you have just been an inspiration. You've blessed me. You've totally blessed me.
Thank you.
And then of the adoptive process. What a wonderful mom. How God puts you into these boys' lives. And I believe something great is going to come of this. And it is definitely for a reason that God chose you. God chose you to be mom for these boys. Yeah. And he didn't need any other outside influence or any help. He knew what he needed for you to raise them. And so it's going to be wonderful.
Bless you.
These boys are going to be the next somebody that one day as an old lady, I'm going to say, that young man is really something special.
Yes.
Well, any parting words, anything else that you would like to say or reach out to any moms, any victims of abuse, anything else that you would like to say?
Yeah, to all victims of abuse, be safe. You know, I just pray that something that was said today will encourage you that you can make it on your own. If you are able to safely get out, you can make it on your own. You can make it. I'm not saying it will be easy. In the very beginning, it may not be easy, but don't give up on yourself because you can absolutely do it. And I have a special place for the adoptive mom that's going through it. Because we feel like we have brought these children into this situation, and it may not even have started until after you got the children. You know, everyone's situation is not the same. But I just want to say to you, stay encouraged as well. Stay encouraged. Do what's best for you and those children. Don't condemn yourself. Don't hate yourself. The children need you. There's a reason why they're in your home. There's a reason why they're in your home. So they need you. Don't give up on yourself because those children need you. Please stay in the fight. Stay in that battle. Pursue those things that are needed for yourself as well as for them. And just continue. Wake up every day saying, okay, I got another day to, you know, do something to help get me out of this, to help encourage myself, to help my children, you know, to keep them encouraged and to keep them safe in the midst of what's going on. So just please be encouraged. Don't give up. Do not give up.
Yes. Oh, beautifully said. Beautifully said. Thank you again. I can't thank you enough for your courage to come on here and speak and share of yourself. It is truly a blessing and quite an honor to have you. And I'm better for knowing you. I feel so blessed knowing you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for this opportunity to be able to tell my story. Thank you for this platform for us who have stories to tell. Thank you. And you're saying an honor for me. Oh my gosh, it is my honor. I am so honored to be able to be face to face with you through this, you know, through this platform. It is truly an honor. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Bless you. Yeah. Well, you all, that's going to wrap up this this podcast edition, and you all continue to pray for me. I ask those who are prayerful people, will you, when you say your prayers, when you think of someone, will you call the name J. Renee Morris? Mm-hmm. Will you please pour your prayers into her and her family? Continue to pray for me as I give more people opportunities to speak and be heard. And I definitely pray for, I pray for the world. I pray for everyone daily, those who are going through, those who are in struggle. I constantly pray. So I ask that you also pour back into our lives with prayer. And you can reach me on all social media. I'm on Facebook under Cortina Jackson. I'm on Instagram at Miss, M-I-S-S, Miss Tina underscore the writer, as I have two books. So, and also, I'm on LinkedIn at Cortina Jackson, and I'm on Twitter at Tina the writer. And you can go to my website at www.cortinajackson.com. Look for me in several movies I've been in, my book On Earth as It Is in Hell, and also The Sounds of Silence Are the Loudest. And I thank God because we just started a campaign called Meldrum Women. Go to meldrum.com to read my story in depth and support us and bless us. Thank you all, and God bless. We'll talk to you next time.